Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. This is about what's been going on in Nepal, or Nepal, as they tend to pronounce it there, about the new Prime Minister. So in a way, it's a good thing that the previous Prime Minister, KP Sharma Oli, was obliged to tender his resignation because the situation is clearly going bad. What's going so wrong? You know that there have been these riots, 20 people have been killed. Now the police killed some of the people. Now I have to go into each of the deaths. I don't know the particulars. Were the police right to kill this person? Was that unavoidable? Was that an excessive use of force? Was it murder? Did these rioters kill people? Demonstration riot, you know? Wow, obviously demonstration is absolutely fine, but there must be no use of force and there must be no vandalism. And the police have to step in and they have to try and calibrate their force and they sometimes overreact. I remember when they were roiled by demonstrations and riots about 2008, leading the downfall of the monarchy. And I knew Prince Dipendra, sorry, Prince Neeraj, my school days, my year, doing slightly the CCF, my mathematics class for a while, so it's pretty dreadful at maths. A little fairly reserved, unsure of himself, partly because he had limited English, a bit of a wild child, keen to smoke and smoke other substances and things like that. He got shot dead by his brother in 2001, and I just couldn't believe it. Then, as I remember saying the next day, he's in ash now because they cremated him straight away. And then his uncle ruled on for a while, Gyanendra, but then abdicated in 2008, should to be a republic. And I know some Western tourists who went there some years afterwards and said the Nepalese were very anxious about the situation, wondered whether the abolition of the monarchy was a fatal mistake. The former Maoists took over, but they didn't govern as Maoists; they'd really moderated. So Nepal, in case you don't know, is in between India and China in the Himalayas. So the only the second Hindu majority country in the world, the other being India, and the birthplace of Buddhism. They're on the roof of the world, in the head of Himalayas mountains. So the country's been roiled by mass demonstrations and indeed riots, burning of public buildings, such as the situations which rocked Sri Lanka in 2022 and Bangladesh in 2024. So there's a lot of this going on in South Asia. There've been similar situations in Pakistan about crowds bursting into military cantonments, seeing how the army officers live in luxury, not the ordinary soldiers. India has been relatively quiescent by comparison. Now, obviously, Nepal is hugely overshadowed by its gigantic neighbors. India, the largest population in the world, China, the second largest population in the world, China, a superpower, India, a regional superpower. Obviously, got much closer ties to India because the Himalayas are really in between Nepal and China. Only a few roads into China. A lot of roads into India, some railway lines, and Nepali is not that different to Hindi, and they often learn Hindi watching Hindi films from Bollywood, going to India to work. They're the only non-Indian nationality allowed to join the Indian Army, the Gurkha Regiment, that dates back to the British era. So yeah, got this very long border with India they can't possibly defend, and that they're having to play the two off against each other, try to be neutral between the two enemies. Of course, if this Cold War became hot between China and India, either one of them or both of them might invade Nepal, which would be disastrous. Nepal would then be the battlefield. Say, well, we'll surprise the enemy by going through here. Nepal is almost undefended. Their military is not very big, not very well equipped. They can't afford a lot of hardware. And then we'll steal a march on the other side. It will prevent them coming through or something like that. So it's a real diplomatic balancing act, and well done to them to manage to stay out of it. Another option, of course, would be to go one way or the other and form a military alliance, invite troops in. And obviously there's no question who wins the beauty contest. That's clearly India, far, far better for democracy and human rights. Though it's been degraded under Narendra Modi, there's no question the situation there is immeasurably better than in the People's Republic of China. Anyway, so Narendra Modi, he's got a lot of sway over India. And I remember way back in 1989, when it was an absolute monarchy. And then there were some pro-democracy demonstrations. Rajiv Gandhi, then the Prime Minister of India, decided to help the democratic movement by causing a lot of hardship in the short term by closing the border. Nothing in, nothing out. And almost all their exports went via India, imports from India, Indian airspace, and nobody could get in and out. And tourism was a big part of their economy. And then there was severe hardship, such enormous protests, the government had to cave in. and allowed democracy, but the Maoist terrorist campaign in the mountains carried on for years, but it was seemed to be manageable for a while. Okay, so obviously India's obviously sometimes worried that some of this instability disorder would spill over into their country as well, and of course this situation, this feebleness in Nepal, could be an opportunity for China to somehow step in. The government appealed for Chinese troops to China, use it as an excuse to make an incursion, to annex it, something like that. I don't think that's in the offing, but there's a slight possibility. So, because Nepal is one of the poorest countries in Asia, about the fifth country, the poorest country, they got 3.5 million Nepalese living abroad, a lot in India, Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Iraq. They're working in the United Kingdom and Australia. They move almost anywhere else. They're just making more money. Okay, so maybe is it good they got rid of that prime minister? Did he cause this bad situation? What there's such a dissatisfaction there? What do you think? But anyway, they've just appointed the first woman as prime minister. Now, some people would say is that a great step forward? What do you reckon? The poorly guest workers in India don't want to be kicked out. So KP Sharma Oli, he has gone, and they've appointed a woman who's age 75, a woman for the very first time to be prime minister. There was some shocking scenes of some of the main government buildings in Kathmandu being torched. Kathmandu, a city I used to know fairly well, but that's many, many years ago. So what is it? Tourism is key to their economy, people obviously scared off. So that's why they've really got to restore order, or people will not be going there to spend money. People often overreact to bad news abroad, to one death abroad, causes more fear than 100 deaths in your own country. So this woman, Sushila Karki, a Hindu woman, like over 80% of the population, she used to be a judge of the Supreme Court. I don't know if she's even a politician now, but she has been inaugurated as prime minister. Anyway, the death toll is rising. Now, just because a new person's in charge, that doesn't mean that she can necessarily restore order or the problems are solved. You get rid of one man, it doesn't necessarily resolve the situation. So the president is Ram Chandra Pudel. Okay, and they think that this will assuage the fury of the mob. But yeah, there's a lot of hardship, a lot of unemployment, and there's poverty in the country at the best of times. Now, she's got links to the Koirala political dynasty, who supplied several prime ministers of the country going back decades, because even the days of absolute monarchy, there was a prime minister, but he, and it was always a he held that office completely by fiat of the king and could be dismissed. I mean, if you go back, was it the Rai family? Because the Queen of Nepal, who married that king, Birendra was monarch when I was there. She was in that sort of prime ministerial family, which had it until, was it the 60s, as a quasi-hereditary thing. Because for over 100 years, her family was always prime minister and his family was always king. And then they got married, I think, for the very first time that the two united like that. But there doesn't seem to be any talk of bringing back the monarchy right now. So she was chief justice, as in the highest judge in the land. She was impeached, but she survived that impeachment. The army's now out on the streets. So the government has banned social media platforms because they say that's allowing writers to organize, to disseminate disinformation and things like that. And people were also furious when they discovered about the opulence in which the daughters and sons of the elite were living. So the top politicians and so on, they say, well, this cannot be got through their salaries or honest business. It's through graft, through kickbacks. This is shocking corruption, while most of us live in impecuniosity. Okay, so there's just people, the salaries are too low, a shortage of goods and so on. Often it's under curfew, people are only allowed out for a few hours a day to buy comestibles and so on. I really don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, I wouldn't be booking a holiday there anytime soon. Goodness, well, what a very sad situation. Any solutions?